The last couple of weeks we've been talking about various Gedolei Yisrael, various great giants, great luminaries of previous generations. We started off with a discussion about the Vilna Gaon. We moved naturally into a discussion about his Talmud, Reb Chaim Volozhiner. And after that we moved as well into another one of his very important students, which was Reb Yisrael Mishklov. And the reason we talked about him last week was because he is the one who was almost solely responsible for the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael being built up. And he did so much on behalf of the Jews who wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael. I'd like to move a little bit away from the students of the Vilna Gaon and talk a little bit about the contemporary of the Vilna Gaon, who was the Dubna Magid. We probably know that we've heard a lot about him, but we don't know much about his relationship with the Vilna Gaon. But the truth is, he did have a relationship. So the Dubna Magid is born in 1740. He passes away in 1804. Until he was 18 years old, he was living at home. He was learning by his own father. And then after that, he went out to become the Magid in Meserich. Now, Meserich is a town in Ukraine, and he was not well known for his time there because he wasn't there that long. He moves from there to another community in Ukraine as well, to Zalkova or something like that, and finally he ends up in a third community in Dubna, which was the place where he really blossomed, the place where he really became famous, and he ended up staying there for 18 years, serving as the Magid of the city of Dubna. Before he passed away, the Dubna Magid said about himself that from the time he was 18 years old, lo avar alav chatzos laila b'shina, he says from the time he was 18 years old, he never slept through a night past chatzos, v'lo avar alav beiz v'hei shelo yatzum b'hem, and he never had a Monday and Thursday that he didn't spend them fasting. Monday and Thursday are considered to be some sort of Yom Hadin, and therefore the Dubna Magid said about himself, from the time he was 18 years old, an adult old enough to understand what life is all about, he fasted Monday and Thursday every week. What about when you had a fast day that came either right before or right after a Monday or a Thursday? So he writes that he made sure to fast 2 days straight because this was his practice every Monday and Thursday. So it gives you a picture a little bit of what the Dubna Magid was all about. One of the Svarim of the time, the Sefer Amidos, which was written by the Dubna Magid himself, we have many Mishalim from the Dubna Magid and many beautiful insights. Those go down in history as the Svarim Ohel Yaakov or a number of different Svarim that are all named after him. Yaakov was his first name. So the only Sefer that the Dubna Magid himself wrote was the Sefer Hamidos. Everything else was collected by his students. So in the Sefer Hamidos, they have there that one of his contemporaries writes what his Seder Hayom was, what his schedule for any given day looked like. So listen to the following. Kalita burugav hayusvuroslo. Every moment, every minute of the day was so carefully measured, so carefully calculated. V'lo ratza la'abed zman aksivas chidushav. The Dubna Magid was so worried that I only have a limited amount of time in my life. Life is not going to be forever. I can't waste the time writing my own svarim. I don't have time for that. I have so much that I want to accomplish. Kefi hatzarech lebar ba'ad kol kore. He said, yes, I understand it would be wonderful if people had my books, but I have a community I have to worry about. I have people that want me to speak, that want to hear what I have to say. I don't have time to write it. V'lo rasham, and he only wrote ki'im ba'avuri yele mizkeres atzmo. He only wrote a little bit down that he should remember. So he wrote what they call as Rashi Prakim. He wrote a little bit here, a little bit there, but he didn't really write that much. It was interesting, I think the Vilna Gaon once pinned him down on that and asked him, why are you not writing everything out in its entirety? Why aren't you concerned that everything's going to be lost? Don't you know that this is something that's important for the next generation? So I think the story goes that he told the Vilna Gaon the following. He said, you know, there was somebody who once made a big wedding, and he invited all the people in the community. He invited the rich people. He invited the poor people. Everybody was invited to come because he considered everyone to be his friend. So they show up, and he says there's a major difference between the rich, the wealthy people who showed up at the wedding, and the more simple people who came to the wedding. What's the difference? The wealthy people who came to the wedding sat down like a mensch. When they served the first course, they ate the first course. When they served the second course, they ate the second course. And they ate everything in order, the way it's supposed to be. Everything was very misudar. Everything was very organized. However, he said, when the poor people who were homeless and never had anything to eat showed up at the wedding, he said, they don't know whether they're going to get another course because they're not used to this. They don't know. And everything they get, they just eat right away when they get it. So they happen to see there's some scraps of fish that are left over from somebody's plate. So they'll go put it together, dip it into some sauce that's on the table, even though it doesn't really mix together. They're going to do whatever comes their way. They're just going to do it immediately and move on because they don't know what's coming. He said, that's the same thing. You're a great tzaddik, Vilna Gaon. The Ribono Shel Olam will give you life. Everything's going to be great for you. You have time to write. You have time to sit. I don't have time. I don't know. I'm the poor person. I don't know what's going to be with me. I don't know that I'm going to be granted life. I don't know that this is not my last moment of life. And he said, I don't have time for all of this. I'm like the poor person who's just trying to grab a little here, a little there. I'm doing whatever I can. More than that, I don't know that I'm going to be able to have the opportunity to appreciate my time in life. And therefore, he said, I'm like that poor person. I'm just doing whatever I can. That's the humility of the Dubna Magid, but that's really what he felt. And he says, Ki yoser ma shahaya chachem ve'amitz kach betvuna bedasim mezima. Yes, he was a very wise person who gave over beautiful insights to his community and to the world. And he was very well liked by everyone. But more than that, od yoser nefla, so much more than that, he invested not in his chachma, not in his mind, not in his wisdom, but bitzidkuso v'chasiduso, timimuso uprishuso. He was more invested in his piety, in the way he acted, in the way he responded to people, in the way he interacted with them. And that was something that took up more of his mind than anything else. Ki kam ka'ari b'chol chatzos ha'layla, he got up every night like a lion in the middle of the night. Gam b'leilei shabbos v'yamim tovim v'halach lebeis medrash l'tikun chatzos, he got up in the middle of the night every night and he went to tikun chatzos. U'bacha b'mar nefesh al churban beis elokeinu, and he used to sit there and cry, literally he would cry on the fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Has anyone ever been in Yerushalayim for Tisha B'Av? If you've never been, it's an amazing, amazing thing to see and experience. Because never in my life have I gone to a place where people are actually crying bitterly on Tisha B'Av. And you go there to the Makam HaMikdash and you see people sitting on the floor, not just saying the kinos and rattling through them, but literally sitting on the floor and crying and understanding what it means not to have a Beis HaMikdash. People who actually think about this, it's a foreign concept to us that we should think about what the lack of a Beis HaMikdash, what its absence means to us. But you go there and you see people literally sitting on the floor and crying uncontrollably because they don't have a Beis HaMikdash in their lives. And that's what it says about the Dubna Magid. He used to spend every night back in the shul, in the Beis Medrash, crying at Chatzos over the fact that there's a Churban. Achar kach, after that, Hayalomed al karav la'or haboker, he would learn until the morning. Halach l'mikva tahara, he would go and purify himself every day. Kahayr hayom lavash talus and tefillin, once the sun rose, he would go and put on his talus and tefillin, and he would wear his talus and tefillin until mincha, it said, because he was involved in pious activities the entire day, so why wouldn't he? Kasher lavash talus and tefillin, when he would sit there with his talus and tefillin and dabin, hesiv espanav el hakir, he would go and turn his face to the wall. Kafaf komaso, he would go and prostrate himself, he would bend over. Va'amad kach kafuf arasher hishlim kol tfilasa, he would stand there bent over until he finished davening. The entirety of his davening, from beginning to end, with such humility. Lo heirim yad, he wasn't raising his hands. Sometimes you see people, they're davening, they're raising hands, they're clapping, they're doing all kinds of things, walking around. The Dubna Magid would sit there with his face against the wall, bent over the entirety of the davening. He didn't move his hand. Lo hania regel, he didn't move his legs. Lo pano yamin u'smol, he didn't turn to the right, he didn't look to the left. Ke'eved ha'omed lefnei rabba, the way davening is supposed to be done. That's what he did every day. Va'akise asher haya neged panav, and he had a chair that was in front of him. Every day he would hold on to it. Hayatamid ki'ilu palag ma'im shataf avar alav. It looked as if there was a stream of water that passed through that chair every day. Because that's what his tefillah was like. He would cry to the point that his tears can be seen on the chair in front of him. Vizeh haya gamkein b'tmidus. This wasn't just when his wife was sick, it wasn't just when he had a dangerous situation in his life, it wasn't just when he felt he needed a parnasa, this was every single day of his life. And I was reminded when I saw this that Rav Soloveitchik discusses about the difference between the opinion of the Rambam and the Ramban. Should we assume that tefillah is a mitzvah midaraisa? Should we assume it's a biblical obligation? Or should we assume that tefillah is only a mitzvah midirabanan? So, one of the Rishonim says, the only time that tefillah is a mitzvah is when you have an eis tzara, when you have a very difficult circumstance that presents itself to your life. That's when you have an obligation to daven. But every other time, we don't really consider that to be an obligation. And the Rambam says, no, you have an obligation to daven every day. Rav Soloveitchik suggests that there really is no machlokes at all. There is no disagreement. They're only talking about what is considered an eis tzara. The Rambam says every moment of life is critical because life is so fickle. And we know that life is so uncontrollable. We know that sometimes we're not in control of what happens in life. And we know that sometimes things can happen and we are not the ones who can determine whether there is going to be life or not. And therefore, says the Rambam, every day of life we have an obligation to daven because every moment of life is something that is critical. We always consider ourselves to be in somewhat of an eis tzara, in somewhat of a difficult circumstance, and therefore tefillah is something we always need to do. And when you read a description about what it means for a person to go and prostrate themselves every day in davening, as if this was the most critical moment of life, it gives a perspective a little bit that yes, every moment of life is supposed to be considered critical, because we are at the mercy of the Ribbono Shel Olam. There is nothing that should be taken for granted. When we see what goes on, and we see how painful life can be for people, and we see how much they can go through, and we see how lucky we are for that which we have, it gives us a perspective to understand that, yes, every moment of life really is critical, because we are at the mercy of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and any of that can be taken away at any moment. And here they write in the description that this was Zos Asa B'chol Yom Mimei Hashana. This is what he did every single day of every single year. Because life meant something serious to him. And he understood how seriously he had to take life. So this is something that they say about the Dubna Magid. The Svarim of the Dubna Magid, as we mentioned, were not written by him. Only one of them was written by him, the Sefer called the Sefer Hamidos. All the rest of them were written by his son, as well as one of his great Talmidim, one of his great students by the name of Rav Beresh Flaum. So they put together all of the Svarim. One of the great Talmid Chacham of the generation characterized him by saying the following. He was the Avi HaMagidim V'Rosh HaDarshanim. He was the foremost, the most preeminent of Magidim, of people who knew how to get to others' hearts. V'Rosh HaDarshanim. Mimizrach Shemesh V'Ad Mevo Muhulel Shem Kevodo. From one end of the world to the other, everybody had heard about him. Everybody knew that the Dubna Magid was a very special and unique personality. The Beis HaLevi even said about the Dubna Magid, Shekol Makam SheHaDubna Magid Masbir Ezo Inyan B'Mashal. Anytime that the Dubna Magid said something in a mashal. Now, we're talking about the Beis HaLevi, who was not a person who was warm and fluffy. The Beis HaLevi was a serious halachic personality. So the Beis HaLevi commented about the Dubna Magid, that any time the Dubna Magid shared an insight, shared a mashal that he had thought of on any particular issue, Efshar Lahavi B'Makam HaMashal Raya MiGemara Mufureshes B'Shas. I can bring a proof from somewhere in the Torah Shebal Peh to the idea that he is saying, that he is sharing. Kol kach kenem v'amitim divrei hadubner magid zatzal. Because every word that he said was honest, was truthful. And you shouldn't think that he's just telling a nice fluffy story and trying to throw in an idea. This is something that really has its roots in the Torah Shebal Peh, and it's something that should be taken seriously. On the Matseva, on the tombstone of the Dubna Magid, it says, Po nitman harav hadarshan hagadol hamafursam. Here lies the great and well-known and acclaimed Magid, Asher Shimo Holech Bechol HaMedinos, because his name is one that is well-known, is recognized in all communities, Lefanav Lo Haya V'Acharav Lo Yihyeh Kamohu. There was no one before him who had this incredible ability. It doesn't mean he's greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not what it means. What it means is his ability to give over and to touch people's hearts was something that Lefanav Lo Haya Kamohu V'Acharav Lo Yihyeh Kamohu, and there never will be another person who will come and be like him. Isha Sheruach Elokim Dibur Bo, a person who the mouth of the Ribbono Shel Olam literally spoke from his mouth. His contemporaries considered him to be such an incredibly insightful personality. And he was asked by one of his contemporaries, why is it that every time you're asked to share an insight about any idea, any time you're asked for an understanding in a pasuk, in Navi or in Chumash, you always give a mashal? Why do we always hear about the mashalim, the parables of the Dubna Magid? Can't you say anything else? So the Dubna Magid explained, naturally, I'm going to answer you with a mashal. So he said the following. He said, the reason why I always do that is because I'm reminded of a story, he says, of a child who was very sick, a young child, and he didn't really understand how important it was that he needs to have treatments. Now, we all know, if you have young children, sometimes you got to give them something that's not so critical, but you have to give them a Tylenol or something of that nature till you get it down. It's not so easy. So if they don't take the Tylenol, so it's not such a big deal. But let's say you have a child who really needs the medication, and without the medication, they're not going to be okay. So the Dubna Magid said, this father is sitting there trying to get whatever medication it was into the mouth of his son, and his son is sitting there closing his mouth, putting his hand over his mouth, and he realizes he doesn't know what's going to be. How's he going to get this to work? So finally he comes up with a plan. He invites a comedian over to the house to say jokes and tell stories, and he knows that while his son is going to listen to all these stories, he's going to smile and his mouth is going to open, and while that's happening, he can shoot in some of the medication when his son is not really paying attention because his mouth is open anyway. And the Dubna Magid said, that's what I feel. So often it's hard to get to people's hearts. It's not easy. You're going to give some kind of busur and you're going to say it, and it's very difficult for people to listen to, and I have very important ideas to share. I cannot just stand up in a shul, I cannot just stand up at a pulpit and say whatever I feel I have to say. I have to figure out first how to open people's mouths, how to make them smile, how to make their hearts open up a little bit. And only after it's open, because they've been made to feel a little bit comfortable, only then do I have the ability to shoot in a little bit of that medication that I feel they absolutely need. And that's what the Dubna Magid is the way he guided his life. That is the reason why he went with this plan, and this is how his messages were so well accepted, so widely accepted by so many in different communities, because he felt he had that ability to open people's minds. Rabbi Yeshua Heschel Ashkenazi, who was the Avbezin in Lublin at the time, writes in his introduction to one of the Dubna Magid Svarim, Shifas Elokim Hushba Alav. The feeling, the aura of the Ribbono Shel Olam was something that was on top of him. And that gave him the ability, Levar Kol Chomer B'derech HaEmes V'HaMusar. It gave him the ability to explain and to make people understand any Chomer, any material, B'derech HaEmes, in its truthful sense, V'HaMusar. Yavin Kol Maskil Otsam Tzidkuso Taharas Yiroso. Anyone who makes the time to actually understand this will know and will understand how great his tahara and his yira was, how his purity and his fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam was. Tofa alav nahara ma'or ha'emes umenuga hachachma v'hamusar. He had this light on him that just was able to shine on other people and make them feel whatever they needed to hear was able to be heard from him. Hachoderes kolev shomea. It got straight to a person's heart. Asher levavurze, that because of this haya ahuv ma'od etzel rabban shel Yisrael. Because of this, he was so beloved by the Rabban Shel Yisrael, the great diamond of our generation, Adonenu Kedoshenu Rabbeinu Eliyahu Mivilna Kanoda Mufursam. Now, if you had the love of the Vilna Gaon, if you were the person who the Vilna Gaon was asking and inviting to come to visit you and speak to you, it means you must have been somebody very special. The Vilna Gaon was the undisputed Gadol Hador at the time, or shall we say, Gadol Hadoros. The Vilna Gaon was probably the great of many generations, not just of his own. And it's clearly documented that the Vilna Gaon sent a number of letters inviting the Dubna Magid to come and speak with him. And in those letters, the Vilna Gaon requests of the Dubna Magid to please give him Musar. And he says, there are very few people in the generation who can actually point out my faults and my shortcomings, but you are one of them. You are a person who has an understanding, who has the intellect, who is able to see and size up a situation and understand it properly. And the Vilna Gaon invited him a number of times to come to his home and to give him Musar and to share his ideas and his insights with him because he loved him so much. So he writes a letter to the Dubna Magid when the Dubna Magid was around 50 years old. So he writes to him the following, Avaksha es sha'ahava nafshi, I request of he who I love so much, sheyavo etzli, that he make time to come and visit me. On the bottom of that letter that the Vilna Gaon sent, it was a very cryptic letter, but on the bottom of the letter, the children of the Vilna Gaon write their own letter that they sent along, that the Dubna Magid should understand how important it is to their father, the relationship that he has, and the awe that he has for the Dubna Magid. They wrote, Gam Anochi HaKosev, HaKosev Alav, I too, the son of the Vilna Gaon, am writing to you because I love you so much. Edrosh HaShlomo, I wonder how you're doing. V'nafshi B'she'elasi, and I have a very important request. L'malos M'shalos Adonenu Marayinu Avi HaGaon, I ask you, please, I beg of you, to please do that which my father says. Lirvos esnafsho nefesh ayefa dashen, to come because my father's soul is getting worn out. My father is not well. Ki chavraso zaras hayira vitzomachas hahaskala, because his friendship with you is something that is built on yira shamayim, and it's something that's built on understanding. And therefore they said, you will be able to join and add into his conversation and his life, simcha vigil, you will make him excited. Acha sha'alti, he says, we ask one thing of you, shalo ya'achar nisiyaso, please do not delay in your coming here. Ki lemitzvah rabba yirtzalo lahachios nefesh adonenu morenu v'rabenu avi hagon, because you are the only one in our generation who has the ability to revive the spirit and the soul of our father. That's how close they felt with the Dubna Magid, and that's how much regard the Vilna Gaon had for the Dubna Magid. And that's an important piece of history because we don't see the Vilna Gaon writing this about anyone else. He had many Talmidim who he loved very much. He had many people who spent time with him. But there was nobody that was written about like he wrote about the Dubna Magid. About a year before the passing of the Vilna Gaon, he once again sends a letter to the Dubna Magid. He says, look, I'm at the end of my life and I very much need you to come. Yavo Yedidi Lebesi, I very much want you to come to my home. V'lo Ya'acharu Pa'ama, please do me a favor and do not delay. Lahashiv ruchi, because I need you to reignite my spirit. Ilu hishtashea osi kipam b'fam, and to make me feel good like you always do. Kiros k'sav zeh, when you see my letter, yizariz nisiyasa v'lo ya'achar, please do us a favor and come as soon as you possibly can. So this is something that I felt was such a beautiful interaction that took place between the Vilna Gaon and the Dubna Magid, two extremely different personalities. The Vilna Gaon gave so much of his brilliance, of his genius to the generation, and he wrote about everything, and he had an understanding in all different walks of life, in all different facets of society. But Here you have the Dubna Maggid, who was so incredibly different from the Vilna Gaon, and yet he was so well respected, he was so highly regarded by the Vilna Gaon, and he was so much a part of what the Vilna Gaon needed in his later years when he really wasn't well. I'd like to leave off with a very beautiful insight of the Dubna Maggid, and it's something that made a tremendous impression on me. I happened to come across it when I was preparing a drasha for Parshas Vayikra, because this is commenting on a pasuk in the Haftorah of Parshas Vayikra. So the Dubna Maggid comments the following. The pasuk says in the Navi Yeshaya, "Velo osi karasa Yaakov, ki yagata bi Yisrael." Now what does that mean? "Velo osi karasa Yaakov." You did not call me. Yaakov is the way that the Ribbono Shel Olam refers to the Jewish people. He says, the Jewish people have not called to me, ki yagata bi Yisrael. I don't even know how to translate those words properly, but that was something that bothered the Dubna Maggid. How do we give just a simple interpretation of that pasuk? What does it mean when the Navi Yeshaya says that? That the Ribbono Shel Olam says the Jewish people aren't calling out to him because they're working so hard. So the Dubna Maggid gave an insight here, which many of his generation said. This is one of the insights of the Dubna Maggid that was said absolutely with Ruach HaKodesh, because it is the simple understanding in the pasuk. And that's why it made a big impression on me. When you have great people who say that this obviously was something that was said by Ruach HaKodesh, it means it's something to pay attention to. So he writes the following. The Dubna Maggid commented in explaining that pasuk. He says, Socher Echad, there was once a wealthy merchant. Shebikesh Mishliach Shalo, he wants that his messenger, he has all kinds of people working for him in the office, so he doesn't go and do the work every time he needs something done outside of the office. He has other people going and doing it for him. So he has a messenger that he requests of him, Lahavilo Chavila Mehanamel. He says, I got a message, I got a note that we have a package by the port. I'd like you to go to the port and pick up the package and bring it to the office. Maybe it's some important documents, maybe it's something that somebody sent us. La'achar Kisha. So this messenger goes, and it takes him the longest time to get there. And he can't understand, what's going on with the messenger? The port is 2 blocks away. What's taking him so long? La'achar Kisha, after a number of hours, Chazar HaShliach Kulo Misnashef. The Shliach, this messenger, is completely drained. He's so exhausted. He's all worn out. And he walks in, and he's dripping of sweat, and he's holding this heavy package. And the owner of the business looks at him, and he says, you brought the wrong package. He turns back to me, and says, how do you know I brought the wrong package? You didn't even open it up yet. How do you know that I brought the wrong thing? Maybe look inside. Maybe I brought the right one. So he says to him, if you are sweating so much and you're working so hard to bring this package here, it means you brought the wrong one because I ordered a box of feathers. If you're working so hard, it means you just got the wrong thing. And that's what the Dubna Maggid said it means here as well. He said that we have the opportunity to perform the Ribbono Shel Olam's mitzvahs. He gives us an opportunity throughout the year to perform all kinds of different mitzvahs. And he said, sometimes you see people who feel such stress and such anxiety and such a burden every time they confront the opportunity to perform a mitzvah. Said the Dubna Maggid, that's not what mitzvahs are meant to make us feel. V'kodei Hashem yachalifu koach, he says. When we perform the mitzvahs of the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's supposed to give us more energy, more vitality, more vigor to do more of it, more strength. And therefore said the Dubna Maggid, the Ribbono Shel Olam looks at us and he says, I see people that don't seem to have any enjoyment, any delight, any pleasure in the mitzvahs that they're doing. They're obviously serving somebody else. Because if they were doing what I was asking them to do, they wouldn't react like this. I asked that the mitzvah should be pleasurable. I set it up in a way in which they should enjoy and have delight out of that which they do. And from the fact that that's not what's happening, I know they brought the wrong package. I sent them to do something, they brought back the wrong thing. They're doing something wrong. Their perspective is off. And he said, perhaps that's what the pasuk means, v'lo osi Karasa Yaakov, you obviously are not calling out to me, ki yagata bi Yisrael, because you are working too hard. If you're working so hard, it means there's something wrong with the perspective that you have and with the understanding of what a mitzvah is supposed to be and how that experience is supposed to affect us. And it's something to think about. So often we think about the mitzvahs that we do, and before Pesach we're kvetching and we're wondering, again, I'm not a woman and I'm not so involved in cleaning the house, I gotta be honest, but at the same time, we all work hard in different things that we do. I don't complain about the job that I do, I love what I do. I love what I do. I feel I'm doing the Ribbono Shel Olam's work. I'm proud and I'm very honored. I'm humbled to be able to be a person who's able to do that. And this is what the Dubna Maggid tells us, that if you were preparing your own wedding, you wouldn't complain about how much work you have to do. You're so excited about all the things that you're being asked to do because this is something that you're really working toward. It's something that you're excited about. It's something that you really are looking forward to. And therefore, he writes, this is a perspective that we need to develop every time we perform mitzvahs. Obviously, it takes a lifetime to develop that. We cannot point fingers at people and say, you should be doing this or you should be doing that. But at the same time, it's a perspective that's worthy of being developed because it's something that the Ribbono Shel Olam intended for the way that we are always supposed to perform his mitzvahs. The Pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh, and this is a comment made by the Alshich. So the Pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh about how exactly a person is supposed to allocate all of their produce that's grown in the field. So we're told that some years you have to give Maaser Rishon, you have to give to a Kohen, you have to give to a Levi, you have to give to an Ani, sometimes you have to have Shemitah, sometimes it's Yovel. Very complicated halachas. Now, some of the years you have to give Maaser Sheni, which means you have to take the produce, at least a portion of it, and bring it up to Yerushalayim and eat the fruits in Yerushalayim. So the Gemara talks about, based on the Psukim, what do you do if a person is in a situation where they have too much produce? How can I take all of this produce and bring it up to Yerushalayim? I'm going to have wagons and wagons. I'm going to pay a fortune of money. It's something I can't afford to do. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money to do that. So the Gemara says, based on the Psukim, you have the ability to be podit. You have the ability to put it onto money. Then you bring the money to Yerushalayim. Once you get there, you'll buy other fruits and you'll eat it there. Not a problem. So the Pasuk, in giving us those instructions, tells us the following. Ki yirba mimcha haderech. What if a person has a road to Yerushalayim that is too far? Ki loch suchal se'eso, because you cannot carry all of this produce. Ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because the place where the Ribbono Shel Olam resides, the Beis HaMikdash, the Yerushalayim, is too far from you. Asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha losim shemo sham, ki yivarechecha Hashem Elokecha. If you have a situation like that, then you should do X, Y, and Z. You should be poded onto money, bring the money up to Yerushalayim, and eat it there. Ask the Alshech two very simple observations. Number one, he says, the Pasuk begins by saying, ki yirbe mimcha haderech, when the road will be too far from you. And then, right afterward, it says, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom. It's the same thing. The pasuk is very carefully measured. Every time we have a pasuk in Chumash, we know every word is very important. So what does it mean here, when the Torah reiterates the same point? Ki yirbe mimcha haderech, when you're going to have a road that is too far, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because it is too far. That's the same thing. Number one, says the Alshech, why is that repeated? Number two, would seem to be worded incorrectly. Why does it say, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom? Because the makom has become too far away from you. If you know anything about anything, a place doesn't move away. You might move away. The place was always there. You have distanced yourself because you chose to live out somewhere else. So why does the Torah say, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom? Because the makom has moved away from you. You have moved away from the makom. It should say, ki ata tirachek me'amakom, when you have chosen to live somewhere that's far away from Yerushalayim. Those are the two questions of the Alshech on this pasuk. And the Alshech writes so beautifully. It's such an incredible insight. He says, you have a person who lives far away from Yerushalayim, but it's all about perspective. It's all about perspective. How can you feel that Yerushalayim is too difficult for you to travel to? Only if ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because you have pushed away mekoma shel olam, because you have pushed away the ribono shel olam from the focal point of your life. And says the Alshech, if you think Yerushalayim is too far, it's because your perspective is off. It's because you have neglected to invite the ribono shel olam as the central theme and focus of your life. And because that's what you have done, you have felt that Yerushalayim keeps moving further and further away from you. Yes, ki yirbe mimcha haderech, we all have a difficult journey to go anywhere we want to go. But for some people it's easier, and for other people they feel that it's harder. Why is it hard, says the Alshech? The reason why it's hard is because ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because you have pushed the Ribbono Shel Olam away from the central focal point of your life. And therefore, he writes, that's when life becomes difficult. That's when all mitzvahs become difficult, because the mitzvahs, in their most basic form, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us in order that they should be enjoyable, that they should be a refreshing and exhilarating experience. And when a person is not able to feel that, it means, in some way, Yirchak Mimcha HaMakom, the Ribbono Shel Olam is not the central theme of every moment that we are awake, of every thought that we have, and therefore we find everything to be too difficult. And that, says the Alshech, is something that the Torah is alluding to when it describes this journey of the Jew who has all the produce, who has to travel to Yerushalayim. That's perhaps why it has become so difficult for the Jew to do that, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is no longer in the central axis of the decision-making process in their life. And this is what the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh explains as well in Bamidbar. He says, when Bilam HaRasha talks about the Jewish people, he says, V'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael. What does it mean? I don't see anybody working. Does it mean none of the Jews work? It can't be what it means. Of course we work. We work like everybody else does. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, what it means is the following. Niskavin lomar, what it means is, Shad tzadikim. When you have a tzadik, Hagam she'osim mitzvos. Yes, it's true that tzadik is running around and doing chesed all day long and doing mitzvos all day long and learning all the time and doing whatever they're doing. Eda margishim she'yesh lahem amol, says the Arachayim HaKadosh. You never see them complaining because they feel, I have the most blessed life in the world. I'm not doing something that I don't want to do. I'm doing something because I'm proud that the Ribbono Shel Olam entrusted me to do this. And it's something that makes me happy. It's not something that gives me anxiety at all. It's something that rejuvenates my spirit. It's something that makes me so excited to wake up every morning because I have the opportunity to do all these mitzvahs and to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'yadarabba, ka'adam hamraviach, I feel like I'm a person who is making money on the job. I'm a person who is only gaining by that which I'm doing. And that, says the Arachayim, is what it means. V'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael. Bilam looks around at the Jewish people and he says, it looks like they're never working. They're just all having a great time. Because every time they're shaking the lulav, and every time they're blowing the shofar, and every time they're sitting in shul, no one's complaining. Everyone is just so excited to be connected with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a level to aspire to. It's not something that all of us are able to have that kind of easy perspective. But this is something that we should all aspire to. It's what the Dubna Magid taught us, is what it means, V'lo osi karasa Yaakov. The way to do it right is, when the Ribbono Shel Olam sees us having pleasure and joy and excitement in that which he asks us to do, there's no greater feeling that he can have, and there's no greater feeling that we can have. It is what Bilam HaRasha professes about the Jewish people. V'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael. This is the perspective that he sees as an outsider. It's what he sees all of us doing. Sometimes it does take an outsider to make us appreciate that which our own community does. We don't see people complaining that they go to shul 3 times a day. It's a wonderful thing. How could people not complain? And you have to run out in the middle of the day to go daven mincha? Isn't that annoying? And you have to stop a meeting in the middle to go bench and to do whatever has to be done? We take pride in the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam asked us to do this. And it's an amazing characteristic of the Jewish people that we do it with joy and we do it with simcha. So let's just close with a comment of Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz, where he writes, why is it incumbent upon us to have simcha as we perform the mitzvahs that we do? Maybe I don't want to do them. Maybe I do find it cumbersome. Maybe it is a big burden on my time. Maybe it is a big strain on my family. Maybe it's not so easy to do the mitzvahs. Why does the Ribbono Shel Olam expect of us to be besimcha? What is so exciting about shaking the lulav? And what is so exciting about waking up early in the morning to go daven shacharis and go out to shul? Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz, let me give you a perspective that should make you understand why a mitzvah should cause a person to feel a sense of simcha. Besimcha sa mitzvah. What does it mean that we're supposed to be mesameach every time we perform a mitzvah? Behisponein adam betachlis shifluso. If a person would only understand how low he or she is. Tipas rucha, where do we come from? Nothing. Kli male busha, do we make the Ribbono Shel Olam so proud in our lives we do everything right? Of course we don't. We all make mistakes, we're all human beings, and it's to be expected. Do we think we're the ones that are holding up the world? Do we think we're the ones that God is so proud of? I don't think everybody can say that with certainty, that they've made God so proud throughout their lives. And yet, with all of that, as lowly as we are, and as many mistakes as we may have made throughout our lives, Melech Malchei Amlachim Tziva Lasos Davar, God pointed a finger at you. And he said, I would like you, Likach Anaf Halula V'Ha'esru. No, you are important to me. I like you, the lowly nothing, who has made me so upset so many times because you've done the wrong thing. But I don't consider you a nothing. I consider you a very important part of my day. And the Ribbono Shel Olam points a finger at each and every one of us and he says, I'd like you to shake my lulav today. Ubo yasa ratzono v'yala l'ratzon l'Hashem. And I ask only of you and nobody else to do this mitzvah because there's nobody else that can do it. Eich lo yismach. How can a person not rejoice over that reality? The Ribbono Shel Olam takes the time to go out of his way and single me out and say that what I do is something that's important to him, that's meaningful. Anytime any human being asks us to do anything for them, we feel important. We feel as if we're needed. Anytime people call upon us because they say there's nobody else who can do this other than you, you are made to feel important because there's nobody else who can do it. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam says to us every single day. I want you to daven shacharis today because there's nobody else who can do it like you. and it means a lot to me. I don't care, there are millions of other Jews all over the world. If you miss it, it will mean a lot to me. It will change my experience. And yet, you might look at yourself as a nobody, as a nothing. What am I in the grand scheme of this world? In the grand scheme of history, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, no, I'm singling you out. Ve'ilu yagia le'ish echad mikan. If a person here, a simple person, who doesn't think they're so important, would get a letter mehamelech, from the king, from the president, le'lech b'shtichuso eze yamim, sends you a letter and says, I'd like you to go take care of this job because you're the only one who can do it. U'bazeyim tzachein be'enav, and the king says, and then, if you do that, obviously I will reward you and I will feel very good about that. Halo yedalik shur ba'avas asos ritzon moshe la'aretz. Will you not jump over mountains to do that? You certainly would. V'im yelech b'derech v'yitztarech lifsoa alei kamshonim. And if you have to go and you travel along on that task that you've been asked to do, and only you've been asked to do, and you come across all kinds of different obstacles. Uladalek p'chasim. V'harim asher b'meder ya'adrun. If God puts all kinds of obstacles in your way, but you were asked by the Melech to do that, you would jump and you would skip over all of those obstacles because you were singled out to do a job that nobody else can do. And that's what we're supposed to be feeling, says Rabbi Yonos HaNaibishitz, every time we're asked to perform a mitzvah. Lo yidag v'lo yifsek chucha mipuma. You're going to be smiling all along the way, as difficult as it may be. Because I know that I'm doing a job which is a sacred task. I know I'm doing something that nobody else could do. I know that I'm accomplishing. And that is an opportunity that we have every time we perform a mitzvah. As we began, this was part of the legacy of the Dubna Magid. It's so much, he inspired people to just open their hearts and let the Ribbono Shel Olam in. And sometimes it takes a lighter mood for a person to be able to do that. And sometimes, yes, it takes a mushel to be able to squirt the medications that need to get in there. But if we take some of these messages, if we take some of this perspective of the Dubna Magid out of his contemporaries, and we understand that yes, the Ribbono Shel Olam has the ability to be a part of all of our lives. He has the ability to single all of us out individually and say, I'd like you to do a job that nobody else in the world can do. It's a mitzvah that I ask you to perform because I believe nobody else can do it the way you can. And says the Rabbi Yonos HaNaibishitz, if this is something a person would think about, would you not walk around with a smile on your face the entire day? God entrusted me and nobody else to do something for him. He asked me to do a job that he believes nobody else is able to perform the way I can. There is nothing that should give a human being more simcha than that. And that is a message that has been imparted by so many greats of so many generations. It's the simcha shel mitzvah that we're all supposed to experience and we're all supposed to feel. Harachamam, hu yachzor lanu avodes beis hamikdash. May we have that opportunity to come back and enjoy our relationship once again with the Ribbono Shel Olam in his Beis HaMikdash. V'sham na'avadcha b'yira kimei olam u'shanim kadmonios. And we should have that opportunity to once again serve him with simcha and with yira, to have the opportunity to become close.